which covers the most important events happening in the world today. And we'll round up this hour's programs with Ulema's speech. In this program, we broadcast excerpts from the speeches of well-known and reputable Islamic scholars. Stay with us.
You can imagine this. Every day, every month, so many people come here, but we don't know about them at all.
Those who spend years in the prisons have not forgotten tortures by the Ba'ath interrogators. The 1991 uprisings in South Iraq broke out when the Ba'ath army had fallen apart after being defeated in the first Persian Gulf War. But with the great service the MKO provided Saddam Hussein with, by spying for the intelligence service and identifying the leaders of the uprisings, the popular movement soon came to an end. Once again, the Ba'ath army took control of the cities in South Iraq. Prisons became full of prisoners whose fate never came to light. The prisons of Basra and other southern cities were packed with prisoners who had been told on by MKO spies. But these prisoners were not the only victims of the MKO service to Saddam Hussein's regime. The total catastrophe for the Iraqi Kurds was on the way. A catastrophe caused again by this man and his organization, Masoud Rajavi and his organization called the MKO. A reportage prepared by the MKO TV states that South Iraq is under the control of rebels, alluding to the 1991 uprisings and the popular movements in that area. With the outbreak of the 1991 uprisings in the south, Kurdish fighters joined the rebellion against the Ba'ath regime. When the Ba'ath party had lost its power as a result of the defeat in the First Persian Gulf War, the fighters succeeded in controlling the heights and the Kurdish populated cities in the north. In addition, the Kurdish fighters managed to bring under control some areas in West Iraq. The streets of Khanarin were scattered with the bodies of the Ba'ath soldiers. The time was ripe for the fighters to go to Baghdad and topple the dictator. But in the absence of the Ba'ath army, there was an equipped army to block their way in North Baghdad. That army was nothing but the Mujahideen-e Khalq organization. The organization had been missioned to block the Kurds' way to the capital city before the complete suppression of the uprisings in the south and the arrival of Ba'ath reinforcements. On March 25, 1991, the Ba'ath military forces finally managed to completely suppress the popular movement in the south. After 2 weeks of bloodshed, and go to help the MKO. With their arrival, the military oppression against the Kurds began. It was called by Masoud Rajavi as Operation Pearl One, as it happened in the heights of the same name.
Operation Pearl One.
Although the Kurdish fighters had been blocked on their way to Baghdad, they still had northern cities under control. At that time, the MKO had advanced on the heart of the Kurdish strongholds, and therefore had been surrounded by them. But when the Ba'ath army couldn't penetrate the Kurds, the MKO deceived them. In their own separate report, Australia's Parliamentary Committee on Foreign Relations and the U.S. State Department, as well as RAND Corporation, have revealed the role of Masoud Rajavi in the Anfal genocide and his help to keep Saddam Hussein in power. In its report, RAND refers to a statement by Rajavi encouraging the MKO forces to take the Kurds under your tanks and save your bullets for the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. Saddam Hussein gave Rajavi the Rafahdine Medallion, a high honor in the Iraqi military, for his role in suppressing the Kurds. The mass killing of the Kurds in the north resulted in the displacement of hundreds of thousands of the Kurds in these areas. Many Kurdish women and children lost their lives due to the cold, hunger, and difficulty of the situation. Many others went missing. A majority of them are still unaccounted for.
Saddam and his army, but he don't try. All this because he don't want Kurdish and Shia to be leader in Iraq, to run Iraq. Why did he do that? He could destroy the army. We could live in peace. The war is finished. He destroyed Kuwait. Kuwait is 1 million. 1 million, he do this all war for 1 million. We are 5 million.
After the fall of Saddam Hussein in 2003, Iraqi prisons were the only hope for the families to find their missing members. Mass graves found in prison yards dashed the hopes of these families to find their long missing members. Suppressing, quelling the 1991 uprisings, and playing a central role in the Anfal genocide, Masoud Rajavi helped the Iraqi dictator remain in power for another 12 years. In return, Saddam Hussein gave him a free rein in his territory.
Saddam's regime is over.
In 2003, the Iraqi people saw a day when the country's dictator was finally arrested. He was put on trial for the mass killing of the Iraqi people and then sentenced to death. But no one asked about his right-hand man, in committing crimes against the Iraqis. Masoud Rajavi disappeared in the chaos of falling Saddam Hussein. Camp Ashraf, November 2013. Long after the fall of Saddam Hussein, the MKO members remained in Camp Ashraf under the protection of the U.S. forces, while trying to show legitimate their presence on the Iraqi soil. Now, years have passed. It's been years since the presence of Masoud Rajavi in Iraq, and Camp Ashraf has turned into a ghost city. The MKO members couldn't justify their presence in Iraq anymore. Evacuating the camp, they moved under the protection of the U.S. forces to a camp in Baghdad called Liberty, where their cost of living is paid out of the Iraqi people's pockets, and where they live in complete security. Who knows? Perhaps Masoud Rajavi and his terrorist organization have been saved by the powers that be to be hired once again in the future.
us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring
event.
In Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
And welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. Increasingly, more Western and even Arab politicians are verbally condemning the latest phase of Israel's genocide war on Gaza, the starvation campaign. But how much do their words mean when time is running out for many Palestinians who are starving to death, especially the children? As politicians have meetings and talk, more Palestinians are taking their last breath. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Paula Rudy, co-founder of Free Palestine Movement out of Berkeley, California. Mazen Gomsai, university professor, historian and author out of Bethlehem, Palestine.
The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome both of you to the program. I'd like to start this off with Paul. Why do you think that increasingly we are seeing more of the global civil society now condemning the genocide in Gaza and even taking more and more actions to try to stop it?
Well, I think the global civil society consists of a higher percentage of genuine human beings than much of our leadership around the world in general. The leadership pursues self-interest, pursues power politics, and pursues imperialism and other destructive movements everywhere. So it doesn't put human a very high value on human life, even millions of human lives. So that's why the global population is, they keep seeing what's happening in Gaza and Palestine and in other places as well, Syria, Ukraine, and so on. And they realize that it's not a necessity, that it doesn't constitute justice, that it's not in their interest, that to the extent that it's in anybody's interest in their own country, it's not the people. It's right. A few corrupt people at the top.
All right, well, what about that, Mazen? I mean, let's look at the other side of that. What do you make of the trend that we are seeing more Western political leaders verbally condemning the genocide now in Gaza?
Well, we Palestinians have been looking not for mere words, we're looking for actions. And very few countries are taking action. And we need action urgently. As you pointed out, people are taking their last breaths. More and more people are now dying of this enforced extermination via famine, via starvation. This is unprecedented in our 21st century. And for people to issue statements like this conference that's happening in New York with France and Saudi Arabia, statements are no longer sufficient. Saying you support a two-state solution has become an excuse to get away from actually doing something about the large-scale genocide that's happening to people in Gaza and increasingly to our people in the West Bank. So we need more action, we need sanctions, we need boycotts, we need divestments, we need an arms embargo, we need to boycott everything Israeli around the world, we need to boycott also their sponsors, the U.S. The U.S. economy cannot flourish while it supports a genocide. We know that they have even depleted their own stockpiles of missiles to intercept their missiles, the THAAD missiles. 1/4 of them were used to defend Israel. So the U.S. is not making missiles enough to defend itself, but it's defending Israel against its own Israeli own aggression against the people of Palestine.
Well, Paul, I mean, since politicians from the U.S. and Europe are increasingly complaining about the acts of the Zionist regime, how likely are we to see sanctions implemented against the regime or no-fly zone implemented against the regime?
Well, the steps that have been taken are baby steps. They're just cosmetic steps, if you will. A few items that go on to the list of things that cannot be sent to Israel, but there's no meaningful end to this. What's happening is that Israel is in fact falling apart from the point of view of its government and administration and its economy and all this sort of thing. The only thing propping it up and being maintained is the supply of military arms. And you can say this is not an economy, but money. Money is being provided to Israel so that it can get things to supply to its people, keep its people fed and so forth, and to keep things operating sort of like a country, even when many things are no longer available. So all of this is basically Israel is a patient that is on life support and being is getting a constant transfusion of blood without stop in order to continue to exist. So but as long as the West is willing to assume this burden, especially the United States, of keeping Israel alive and capable of harming the Palestinians and the Iranians and the Lebanese and others, then it will continue to go on. But it is losing its own support all around the world, and especially among Jews. I mean, there were more than 1,000 rabbis that wrote a complaint to Israel for its genocide. It didn't. I don't know whether it used the word genocide or not, but it said that this policy is not acceptable for. It's not acceptable for Jews to have this kind of policy. So it's losing its own base, its own constituency.
Yeah, interesting point. What about that, Mazand? As Paul said, that increasingly Jews around the world are standing up against the regime. Also, inside of the occupied territories in general, we're seeing actually more and more individuals actually standing up and condemning the genocide. Another major demonstration took place in Tel Aviv the other night. I mean, your thoughts, Mazen?
Well, I say, as far as Jewish people around the world are waking up and realizing this is not in their long-term interests, This is too little too late. I think the Zionist movement has taken control of a lot of the Jewish discourse around the world and has made Zionism equivalent to Judaism in many ways. And they are responsible for a lot of growth of anti-Semitism around the world because there's not much opposition to them. You know, if I look at within Israeli society, for example, 82% of Israeli Jews support the ethnic cleansing. A vast majority of Israeli Jews support the genocide of the Gaza people. You know, yes, there are some individual Jews and even organizations like B'Tselem, an Israeli Jewish organization that came out finally after 21 months and called this a genocide. This is a good sign, and I am for that, and I support this. But I say we need a lot more and a lot sooner, and it should have been done 21 months ago, not now. So I think we are, you know, we saw 8% of the population of Gaza decimated, killed, basically, and all of Gaza basically is displaced. All the people, all the houses were destroyed, or most of them. So we are seeing a devastation beyond description, and to say to put a stop to it now because of growth of Jewish opposition or even international opposition, it's not happening nearly fast enough. And this is largely due to Western support, as pointed out by Paul. It's a lifeline. The Western support is a lifeline for genocide.
Well, speaking of Western support, I mean, Paul, do you see the so-called international community, and although, as I said earlier, they are condemning, increasingly condemning what is happening in Gaza, but it in itself is actually being used as a technique, as a ploy to continue to allow, to give the Israeli regime and the U.S. regimes more time to continue with what they are doing inside of Gaza instead of putting an end to it?
Well, there's a lot of deception in what in the so-called complaints and criticisms from the international community, especially from the governments that are in the international community, but also in the press, which is under the control of the Zionist lobby everywhere, in the U.S. especially, but also in the U.K., Germany, France, the Netherlands, and so on. I mean, it's a very powerful organization, and they have very powerful control over a lot of the press. But what they're saying about complaints of people dying and the responses that are coming from the Israeli government and even the international community, these responses are ridiculous. They say that they're doing airdrops, but they're doing the airdrops in such a way that you would not want airdrops anymore. And they're providing aid to the people of Gaza in such a way that they can actually kill more people by providing aid with this so-called private enterprise. So it's all deception, and unfortunately, the criticisms are being met with more lies and more deception in order to deflect the criticism.
Right. Well, talking about the airdrops, I mean, Mazen, let's look at this, because on the one hand, all the Israeli regime has to do is open up, as they say, the apartheid walls and let all the trucks come in and people could get all the aid that they need. But they have opted for these so-called airdrops, which we had seen once before take place and a number of people being killed and hit with it. I mean, your thoughts on this, even on Saturday, even from the Israeli military itself has admitted that 7 pallets of flour, sugar, and canned goods were dropped, which doesn't even equal 1 truckload of goods.
Indeed, one airplane cannot carry more than a truck, and this is very clear. And simultaneously with this one airplane dropping this, and so far it's only one plane that did this, we saw that there's news that Israeli soldiers buried 1,000 truck full worth of substances, food and other medicines. This is prevented from entering. Thousands of trucks are waiting at the border, but the food that was with there waiting, they're now burying it. They're actually dumping it in large holes and burying, claiming that it has expired. But of course, the Gaza people are starving and they don't care if it's expired flour. They're willing to eat it, but Israel doesn't allow it in, and they're burying 1,000 loads of trucks, basically, in the desert.
What about that, Paul? I mean, it just seems that the Israeli society, it's on a very different level from the majority of societies in the world. As our guests in Bethlehem said, Mazen, that, I mean, over 80% of the population inside occupied territories, the Israelis, actually support the continuation of this genocide. What is it about Israeli society that it just seems to be filled with such depraved individuals?
I'm not a psychiatrist, and but part of the problem, and we have the problem everywhere in the United States as well, is that the press is heavily controlled, especially in Israel, because it's in the Hebrew language. And who reads the Hebrew language except Israelis and those who have to monitor Israelis? So it's very heavily controlled. It's very heavily censored, and to a large extent, Israelis are never fully aware of what is going on and what the real consequences are for them, and the propaganda and the fanatical parties in Israel that are permitted to have full sway, not only to convince the public, but also to control the government, because the government has some of the most fanatical elements in it right now, and it's not going to get better. It's only going to get worse. You have only to look at past history, to World War II, for example, with Mussolini and Hitler and so forth, that the means of controlling the public, at least to the extent of getting the support they want and suppressing any dissent. Not that there's enough dissent in Israel to start with, but a lot of the people who would dissent have left Israel. They've had enough of Israel. They don't want any more to do with it. Mm. So this is Israel is increasingly becoming similar to the Crusader bastions that remained at the end of the Crusader period, where you had a bunch of fanatics holding out in a redoubt or a castle, where they held out to the end. Mm-hmm. This is the direction that Israel seems to be going in, and the more they go there, the more fanatical they get.
Right. Well, I mean, Mazen, I mean, even with the aid distribution, what they want to call the aid distribution, U.S. Zionist forces, it just seems to be that they want to inflict as much pain as possible on the Palestinians, and their goal is just this total humiliation campaign. Your thoughts?
Well, clearly Israel articulated its goals is a full surrender of the Palestinian population, basically allowing the Zionists to do whatever they want to with us, killing us, ethnically cleansing us, whatever they wanted to do. And they thought they could accomplish this with this genocide and with the massive military might of the Israeli army, of course, backed by the U.S. itself, a colonial settler state just like Israel. Unfortunately, you know, this is the reality that we Palestinians have lived for the past 77 years or so, since the foundation of this rogue regime, which is a project of the Zionist movement. It's not a state, it's a project of the Zionist movement to create a thorn in the side of the Arab and Islamic world and keep us divided, follow on Sykes-Picot and so forth. I think it is really now, you know, the horrors that they're inflicting is indeed waking a lot of people up. And I'm hoping the most important people it needs to wake up is the Muslim and Arab people who unfortunately have been fed a group of lies since Balfour and Sykes-Picot and others have tried to trick us into thinking that we can have puppet regimes of the West running our show and call that independence.
Yeah, let's hope everyone wakes up to the reality. Well, Paul, I mean, even today, at least 80 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza. And we see an average of 100 or over 100 people every day. And it seems to be this almost, I hate to say the word, it's a normalization, a desensitization that's taking place. Let's talk about that side of that and the danger to this just becoming a norm, that people look at television and they expect to see at least 100 Palestinians being killed that day.
Well, there is some danger to that, but I'm encouraged by the growth of resistance of various kinds throughout the world, including, for example, the Sumud flotilla that is next going to Gaza, and they are, it's a larger group, and it's growing, actually, I think. It's true that a lot of people and communities are, you know, they don't want to look at the news from Gaza every day, but the news from Gaza is toned down by many places. For example, when we talk about the number of Palestinians killed, what we're talking about is the ones that are killed with arms and this sort of thing. The statistics of those who have died of exposure and disease and bad water and of course starvation, these statistics are not included. I have to think that a more realistic number is between 10 and 20% of the population right now. And of course, Israel wants to make it 90 or 100% of the population.
Absolutely.
That's what they're working towards.
Yes, absolutely unbelievable. I mean, Mazen, with all of this taking place and the starvation campaign and the continued genocide, at the same time, we continue to see the Palestinian resistance hitting the Israeli regime hard, and that they're losing more and more troops. I want to talk about that side of things. We have about 2 minutes. How is that still possible, Mazen?
Well, this is what's remarkable. When people are pushed to the brink, of course, they resist. When people's lands is being stolen, they resist. So the resistance continues, of course. And what is puzzling to even Israeli political and military analysts is after we put in 21 months of total destruction of Gaza, you know, where we destroyed so many houses, so many buildings, all the hospitals, all the universities, a lot of the schools. Even with all of that, it seems there is still resistance. This was, to many observers, many military analysts, both Israeli and American, and also local Arab to be a puzzling phenomenon. But I don't think it's a puzzling phenomenon. As a biologist, I can tell you people naturally resist, and they defend their lives, and they will continue to resist until colonialism ends. I mean,
okay.
We saw that Native Americans happen the same way.
And on that note, I thank you both for being with me, Paulo Rudy, co-founder of Free Palestine Movement out of Berkeley, Mazza and Komsai, university professor, historian, and author out of Bethlehem. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Ayatollah Mazahiri. Please stay tuned.
ایوب انصاری یکی از متشخصهای مدینه است پیغمبر اومدن رد بشن
Once Prophet Muhammad was passing by and suddenly he saw Abu Ayyub Ansari, one of his companions, sitting with his family by the corner of a street. Prophet Muhammad asked him about the reason, and he stated, A new convert to Islam recently migrated from Mecca to Medina. He had no place to go, so I resided him and his family in my house till he finds a place. I am very much proud that I made such a sacrifice and I resided him in my house.
وَأَقِيمُ الصَّلَاةَ وَآتُ الزَّكَاةَ منتظر امام زمان نماز را زنده نگاه می‌دارد.
Now, the true awaiter of Imam al-Mahdi must establish prayer and pay zakat like what Abu Ayyub did. This means that we must follow the orders of Allah, Prophet Muhammad and those who are close to Allah, namely the infallible Imams. At this time, we must follow the footsteps of our Imam, who is a major occultation. Even we must follow the orders of the true followers of Imam al-Mahdi, namely the religious authorities or Maraja, and especially the Wali Faqih of our time, who is our leader. This is the exact meaning of waiting for the reappearance of Imam al-Mahdi. Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRive English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Ayatollah Mazahiri. To find out more about our programs, please log on to our website, iranradio.ir. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
Chased by wolves, followed by a hawk, on the battlefield you took your final walk. It took my breath when you said goodbye, but then again, heroes never die. Your final words were stay the course. Trust in God, the everlasting source. Don't give in to the enemy's plots. Resist with faith, go against the odds. Your way I follow, oh my hero. Unbreakable soul, unstoppable power. Until the last breath you never surrender. Unshakable faith, unwavering sacrifice. Make you the hero we'll remember forever. Your blood was spilled, but it nourished my roots. I then became a tree with me. Our love, courage, and resolve. You've made me a soldier, so you I salute. Your way I follow, oh my hero. Unbreakable soul, unstoppable power, until the last breath you never surrender. Unshakable faith, unwavering sacrifice, make you the hero.
morning to you all. You are tuned into Iran Radio broadcasting from Tehran, and we are very happy to have you with us. I'm your host for the next hour. And here are some interesting facts about Islam. Many academic traditions, including the distinction between graduates and undergraduates, began at Islamic University Al-Azhar, the resplendent university in Cairo, Egypt. The university was founded in the 10th century and is renowned for its philosophical and theoretical scholarship. Algebra, from the Arabic al-jabr, originated in the Islamic world. Although Muslims are often associated with the Arab world, fewer than 15% of Muslims are Arabs. Muslims are found among virtually all ethnic groups, nationalities, and countries.
Senior commander of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps warns that in case of renewed aggression against Iran, the country will give an even more crushing response to its enemies. The Israeli military continues its genocide in Gaza, killing more Palestinian civilians in a new wave of attacks. Aid distribution centers remain the primary targets of direct Israeli fire. And the Yemeni army conducts new anti-Israel operations in support of Gaza, hitting three vital military targets in the occupied territories with several drones. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. Our top story for this half hour, senior commander of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps warns that in case of renewed aggression against Iran, the country will give an even more crushing response to its enemies. That's according to the IRGC's spokesman, Brigadier General Ali Mohammad Naini. He said the latest anti-Iran remarks by Israeli officials clearly prove how scared they are of the unity of Iranians and the country's powerful missiles. Naini noted that in case of a new aggression, Iran's response will be powerful enough to make it impossible for them to live in the occupied territories. He stated that Iran's powerful response during the 12-day U.S.-Israeli-imposed war totally disrupted normal life across the occupied territories and took the occupying regime to the brink of demise. The commander said it was Iran's power that made the Israeli regime desperate and forced it to seek a ceasefire through several mediators. Naini stressed that in case of a new aggression, it's possible for Iran to change the geographic theater of war, and its response would be much more powerful. Author and journalist Eric Wahlberg joined us earlier to discuss the possibility of another direct military confrontation between Iran and Israel. Here's what he had to say.
Iran made it a point that it would develop a missile capability that to try and build a huge air force, Iran was really not in that position. So it's taken this tact for three decades, and it's paid off with brilliant scientists and devoted Iranians that are concerned about the welfare of their country. They were able to produce missiles that can target and destroy Israel, and that is the only thing that Israel appreciates. You have to really punch it in the nose for it to stand up. And so I'm shocked that after the display that clearly Iran can destroy Israel, but it didn't. It didn't completely. It could have. It didn't, but and Israel is still chattering away as if it's, a squirrel trying to make noises and scare its opponents. But it's not a credible, Israel is not a credible threat now to Iran. So I don't know what's in their mind.
Iran has strongly condemned a raft of new U.S. sanctions against its citizens, entities, and vessels, calling them a clear sign of Washington's long-standing hostility towards Iranians. Foreign Ministry spokesman Ismail Baghaei described the new sanctions, which target Iran's oil sector, as a malicious effort to undermine the country's economic development. He said Washington's unlawful and unilateral sanctions constitute a criminal action that violates the basic principles of international law and human rights and amounts to crimes against humanity. Baghaei stressed that the United States' addiction to unilateral behavior and its use of legal and coercive measures at international level face the entire world with unprecedented threats. He emphasized that no amount of sanctions, economic terrorism, and war would weaken the Iranian nation's determination to pursue its lofty goals and protect its national sovereignty. The Israeli military continues its genocide in Gaza, killing more Palestinian civilians in a new wave of attacks. Aid distribution centers remain the primary targets of direct Israeli fire. One of the deadliest strikes occurred near the Zikim area northwest of Gaza, where at least 55 Palestinians were killed after Israeli forces opened fire on a crowd seeking humanitarian aid. Similar attacks were reported across the territory, including in Rafah in the south and along the Netzarim corridor in central Gaza, resulting in multiple casualties. The new fatalities increased the total number of aid seekers killed in the territory to more than 1,200. Israeli forces also struck various areas with drones, airstrikes, and artillery fire. A strike on tents for displaced people in the Al-Mawasi area of Khan Yunis in southern Gaza killed three people. The U.S.-Israeli genocide, which began in October 2023, has so far killed more than 60,100 Palestinians, leaving over 146,200 others injured. We earlier talked to our Gaza correspondent, Motiabou Mossabeh, to get further details on the latest Israeli attacks across the blockaded territory. Let's take a listen.
As you know, the eastern side of Gaza today witnessed another cascade and wave of destructive and brutal strikes and attacks that were concentrated in Al-Tufah neighborhood. In addition to Azeitoun neighborhood,